Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Sarasate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Satarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So, the temple that we will soon be going to, long anticipated, and soon we'll get there, is the temple of Suchindram. Suchindram is a combination of Suchi and Indra, because Indra made a big asuchi, big papa, big sin, and he was cursed by Gautama, and he came here to get released from that sin, and we're going to hear that description. Within the temple, as you heard already, there's a very unique deity. I don't know if there's another one like her in the world. And it's a deity of all three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh, in one deity form. I've not seen the deity, so I don't know what to expect. In there's a place, Harihara Kshetra, a place where one half of the deity is Vishnu and the other half of the deity is Lord Shiva. Harihara. And there's a very wonderful pastime connected with the Harihara Kshetra pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and that place. But here it's all three. Now, when we were at the Shiva temple, there was some discussion about why it is that we, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, worshippers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why it is that we accept Krishna as the cause of all causes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By others, Sri Vaishnavas in particular, accept Narayana as the Supreme Cause of all causes and Personality of Godhead. And the emphasis there was upon the pramana, or the evidence, the means of knowing something. Of course, their mood of worship is certainly connected to the scriptural authority and how they conclude things. So I'm going to be describing from the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam something that's consistent with what we're used to hearing, what's very plausible, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and there's nothing that he cannot do, and all of those nice understandings. And then there's another one that I'm going to narrate, and I've thought long and hard and discussed with some others about something that's similar to but different from Srimad Bhagavatam's presentation, because my concern is I didn't want to confuse anybody. I mean anybody. So the preamble here is to prevent confusion. The narration is different, but if one understands the following message, it's quite okay. It's a Puranic description of the three, Vishnu, Brahma, and Lord Shiva, becoming sons of Atri and Anasuya. And just as, so that the, how that happens is differently described, but there are pastimes wherein the Supreme Personality of Godhead likes to place his devotee in a position that appears to be superior to him. Krishna likes that. Krishna likes that. And so the devotees may accept a position that looks superior to Krishna, although they know that Krishna is superior to them. Confirmed. Obviously, one is Arjun fighting on the Kurukshetra battle. Krishna could have, he showed Arjuna all destroyed. But Krishna, Arjuna performed the activity so that Arjuna could be glorified as having been victorious at the Kurukshetra battle. Or Mother Yashoda binding Krishna. He who can't be bound was bound. He who is unborn was born. He who was feared by fear personified was afraid of the little stick in Mother Yashoda's hand. Or another example, Maharaj Ambarish, when the Sudarshan Chakra was pursuing Durvasa Muni, Lord Vishnu said, there's nothing I can do, although it's his Sudarshan Chakra. I cannot act independently of my devotee, Maharaj Ambarish. You have to go ask him. If he says okay, it's okay. And if he doesn't say okay, he can't interfere. Of course he can interfere. He's the independent Supreme Lord. He can do whatever he likes. And that's one of the things he likes. He likes elevating his devotee above himself. Of course, it requires a certain purity and quality devotion. But for such devotees, Krishna likes to elevate those devotees above himself, where he's helpless and they have to help him. Krishna likes. Yes? We know that from our Gaudiya tradition, the teachings of what is Krishna like, or what is Vishnu like. And this is a case where Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva and their potencies, their consorts, place themselves by, that you're going to hear narrated second, they place themselves subordinate to the virtue of Anasuya. So it's those three lords and their consorts' appreciation and offering honor to the quality of chastity and fidelity of Anasuya. And it's immediately connected to Suchindra, Indra becoming purified. So I think I'll start with what we're more familiar with, and that's Srimad Bhagavatam. The first mention of Atri and Anasuya being the mother and father of the personality of Godhead, Dattatreya, is mentioned in Canto 1, Chapter 3. Because there, in Chapter 3, there's a list, partial list, of incarnations of the Supreme Lord, because that was one of the six questions asked by the sages, headed by Shaunaka to Suta Goswami. Please describe those forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. So mentioned early on in that list of Dattatreya. So Dattatreya is a partial incarnation of Lord Vishnu, as Durvasa Muni is a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva, and as Soma or Chandra, is a partial incarnation of Lord Brahma. So those three became sons of Atri and Anasuya. And that's described in Canto 1, Chapter 3. Then there's little reference in Srimad Bhagavatam. In, if you recall, when we were discussing about how it was that Ravana, when he was killed, Lord Ramachandra wanted to atone for killing of a Brahmana. So how was it that he was being considered a Brahmana? Because he was the son of Vishrava, who was the son of Palashtya, who was a direct son of Lord Brahma. All of them being Brahmanas. Just something happened funny with Ravana. He started being a Brahmana, but he became not a Brahmana. Became a vicious Kshatriya, and then he became a Rakshasa. He really went downhill. So, if you recall, there were 10 sages that were born as direct sons of Lord Brahma. You remember? And Palashtya was one of them. Well, another one that was one of them was Atri, of the Atri and Anusuya. So, in this southern portion of India, there are two rishis that were especially prominent over on the eastern side. As we were going down, we kept hearing about Agastya Muni and Agastya Muni and Agastya Muni. So it depends on which part of India, which part of South India you're from, where you say that Agastya Muni had his hermitage. Over here they say he had his hermitage over here. Over there they say he had his hermitage over there. But he moved around a bit. Agastya Muni. But Atri Muni was another who kept his hermitage right here in Suchindram. Suchindram, before it was Suchindram, was a forested area that was lush and beautiful and, you know, perfect for his hermitage. So Atri is very, very prominent. There's Atri this and Atri that, streets and towns, and Atri's prominence is very significant in this part of South India. So, the Bhagavatam describes these three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, becoming sons of Atri and Anasuya in Canto 4, Chapter 1. There's, in Canto 4, Chapter 1, there's genealogy, or lists of kings and descendants from Manu. And there's a brief description presented there, where Maitreya is speaking to Vidura, and he just mentions a fact. I'll read it, and I'll try to read it right into the microphone so our translators can hear. Anasuya, the wife of Atri Muni, gave birth to three very famous sons, Soma, Dattatreya, and Durvasa, who were partial incarnations of Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma. Soma being partial incarnation of Brahma. You know the other ones. Dattatreya, partial incarnation of Lord Vishnu. And Durvasa, partial manifestation or representation of Lord Shiva. So when Vidura hears this statement from Maitreya, he goes, "Ooh, tell me more, tell me more. How did that happen?" So he says, Maitreya says, "Lord Brahma, after these 10 sons were born, he ordered them or gave them the service of create praja. That was their program. They were to help populate the planet with different species and good progeny. So Lord Brahma made the marriage arrangement for Atri with Anasuya. And they went to perform austerities before just creating children. The Bhagavatam says they came to the valley of the mountain known as Riksha. In that mountain valley flows a river named Nirvindya. Nirvindya. Is there a river today named Nirvindya in this area? Nirvindya. Is there a river in this area by that name? Just opposite. Look at that. So Atri and Anasuya came to this area to perform austerities on the bank of the river. Many Ashok trees. And it just, you know, beautiful waterfalls and so many nice things. And the sage concentrated his mind on the yogic breathing exercise, pranayama. It was Satya Yuga, after all. And so he was doing the Satya Yuga program, dhyan, meditation. And very much like what Dhruva Maharaj did during Satya Yuga, after some time he started standing on one leg doing his dhyan. And he had a strong desire, meditation while he was doing his, you know, yoga asanas. He wanted the Lord of the universe to become his son, or he wanted a son like the Lord of the universe. And Prabhupada comments in the purport, apparently Atri Muni didn't have a clear idea who was the personality of Godhead. He just wanted a son like the Lord of the universe. So as he continued his austerities, if you remember what happened with Dhruva, he became as heavy as the universe, and the weight, his foot was pressing the surface of the earth down and down and down, and his pranayama, his controlling of his breath, was suffocating the entire universe. Well, what happened to Atri is fire started coming out of his head. He apparently didn't pay much attention to the fire coming out of his head. He was paying attention yoga asanas and his pranayama and his desire to have the personality of Godhead as his son. And the celestial beings were very concerned. This is, who knows, maybe the destruction of the universe will come just from what this sage is doing. But together, the three deities, Vishnu, Angaruda, Brahma, and Nandi, and Lord Brahma on the swan carrier, they all came at all three of them at the same time and manifested themselves before Atri Muni. Now Dhruva was clearer because he had Narada's instructions and his mother's advice, Lord Vishnu. But Atri didn't have that, so all three of them came. And he was very surprised. And he was very devoted, but he didn't know exactly what to do. There he is standing on one leg. So he somehow hopped his way over to the three of them and paid his obeisances. He just fell down like a rod before them. And because they were all so together, so brilliant, it was like the Brahma Jyoti. He couldn't see. So he closed his eyes. And then slowly he opened his eyes. And he offered some very beautiful prayers. And they were very pleased with his beautiful prayers. And then the three of them spoke. Like, you know, a trio, the three of them. Anyway. My dear Brahmana, you are perfect in your determination. And it is for that reason that we have decided to fulfill your desire. This is the Bhagavatam. We are all the same person upon whom you were meditating. And therefore we have all come to you. You will have sons who will represent a partial manifestation of our potency. And because we desire all good fortune for you, those sons will glorify your reputation throughout the world. And after speaking in that way, the three disappeared. And as was the intention of Atri and Anusuya, the three became three sons, partial manifestations of those three deities. That's the Bhagavatam's rendering of how Dattatreya, etc., became sons of Anatri. Now there's another version which is popularly known here and which Vaishnavas commonly do refer to, and I'll just mention again it's an example, it's one of those examples where the Supreme All-Powerful Lord places himself in a position subordinate to his own devotee in order to glorify his own devotee. In this case, it's specifically Anusuya. So, that begins this way. Formerly, this Suchindram was a fabulous forest. And all kinds of abundant birds and trees and flowering plants and all kinds of nice edibles and everything that a sage would want was readily available. And so in a very peaceful way, Atri and Anusuya took up their residence here, made a little hermitage, and began their austerities and processes of purification. One of Anusuya's gifts, her skills, was in an instant from earth she could make a baked earthen pot, and then she would bring celestial Ganges water in that pot and provide it to her husband for his worship every day. As providence would have it, after some time, and you'll hear the reason why in a bit, the area became very dry. There was a drought. No rain was coming. And Atri was concerned, not only for himself, but he's a sage, so he's concerned with all the forest animals and birds and trees, that there was no water. And so what he decided to do was he performed a sacrifice for Lord Brahma, to then ask Lord Brahma what was the reason and what could be done. So he did that. He formed a sacrifice for Lord Brahma, who appeared before him and indicated, well, I know that there is a problem, but I don't know what the problem is. But my recommendation as a solution is you go to the Himalayas and you worship Lord Vishnu, the Lord of Vaikuntha, and I'm sure he'll help you. So hearing that, Atri sat in meditation, not only on Lord Vishnu, but all three gods, and all three of them appeared before him in person. And then Atri asked the same question. What's the cause of the problem for this drought, and what can be done to overcome it? And they indicated that the reason for the drought was that Gautama Rishi had cursed Indra for misconduct with his wife, Ahalya. And while he's been cursed, the curse was so severe, Indra is in a shamed and shameful position. He isn't performing his duties right now of providing rain. So he made a similar recommendation. You go to the Himalayas and call in and let him know the problem that you're facing. That was the advice he received. So Atri Muni was ready to take care of that nice suggestion. And he prepared himself for the journey to go all the way from here to the Himalayas. And then he informed his wife, Anasuya, what the plan was. And he was concerned that she would be here in this undeveloped kind of wild forest alone. And how would she feel about that? And she said, if you give your instruction for me to, I'll stay here. There's only one request. Let me bathe your feet with water, and I'll keep that water in a pot, and that water will be my worshipable object, and I will feel safe and protected in your presence. She was so faithful to her husband. Like, so off he went. Atri went to the Himalayas, and Anasuya stayed behind here in Suchindram area in the forest. Meanwhile, the plot starts to thicken. All three, Vishnu, Brahma, and Lord Shiva, they understood Atri's qualifications, and they also understood Anasuya's qualifications. And they were curious to measure or see the exhibition of Anasuya's qualifications. Faithfulness and chastity to her husband. So they called Narada Muni and asked him, can you think of a way that we can have Anasuya display her quality, her strength of her chastity and power that comes from that chastity? So Narada made a plan, and along with some other sages, they came to Suchindram, to the very ashram where Atri and Anasuya had been residing, except Atri wasn't there, and Anasuya's all alone in this ashram. And here come a whole bunch of sages. But Anasuya was such a qualified personality. She was with abandon about, you know, her circumstances, and she just saw an opportunity to serve some sadhus. So she came forward with a big smile, very happy. How is it that you have come here into this dark wilderness? Is there some service that I can do for all of you? So they were amazed at the pleasantness and the joyfulness and the eagerness of her mood of service. And so they suggested, well, we've been fasting for a very long time, and if it's possible, can you prepare a meal for us? And she was, sure, I'll prepare a meal for you. What items would you like? So they deliberately selected items that would just be impossible to get in a forest. Well, she said, very well. It's kind of like Draupadi telling Durvasa Muni, sure, you're 60,000. Sure, just take your bath in the sacred river, and when you come back, I'll see that everything is arranged. She had no idea how she was going to arrange it, because she had such faith in her husband Atri, and she went to that pot of water and offered prayers to the pot of water, and somehow mystically there was a big feast. And so when Narada Muni and the sages came back and they saw this feast with very rare ingredients, they were very surprised. How had Anasuya done this? Then Narada Muni asked Anasuya, one of the things that I asked you for a feast, was iron peanuts. There's peanuts and then there's iron, and then there's no such thing as iron peanuts. But he had asked her for iron peanuts and she produced them. So what is... he took those iron peanuts, Narada, and brought them to Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, husband of Lord Vishnu, or Narayana, you would say Rama, and Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva, and Saraswati, and showed them, "Have you ever seen anything like this before? Iron peanuts." Anasuya produced them. "Do you think, any one of you three, do you think you can somehow roast them and make them into edible peanuts?" And they said, "We have no idea. It's not edible. We have no idea how this could be done." Narada then suggested, "I think Anasuya will know." So Narada went back to his ashram and presented her with the iron peanuts and asked her if she could roast them and make them so they're edible. So, remembering the lotus feet of Atri Muni, with the power of her devotion and her austerity and her chastity, she ate iron peanuts and they became edible. And she offered them to Narada Muni, who was very surprised. So are we. And when Narada went back to the three wives of the three deities and showed them the roasted peanuts from the iron peanuts, they were amazed. And so they started to wonder, what is the limit of the power of Anasuya because of her devotion and her faithfulness and her chastity to Atri Muni? Do you think that there's some way to further examine the limit of Anasuya's chastity and her power? So Narada made a suggestion, which they carried out. The consorts went to their husbands and said, "Can you go to Anasuya's ashram in the disguise of brahmanas and test the power of Anasuya's chastity?" So they agreed. It caused a problem. You don't just test the chastity of Anasuya. But they went, and they went in forms or disguises like elderly saintly persons. And similar as Narada and the sages had gone, so, and into the forest they came, into the hermitage of Atri and Anasuya. I mean, Atri and Anasuya saw these three elderly saintly personalities. She was very pleased, with a big smile, very happy. "Is there some service I can do? Is there something that I can make your and your austerities very nice?" And their how her mood, again, they were so pleased with, so pleased with. They said, "Yes, we're very hungry. there's been a big drought in the whole area and we haven't eaten for a long time. We're really hungry. Can you prepare a nice big meal for us? She said, sure. Go take your bath in the sacred river and come back and I'll have your feast ready. And similarly, as they went, she remembered the lotus feet of her husband. And voila, there was a big feast. And when they came back and they saw the big feast, they were amazed. And they didn't begin eating. They were sitting there looking at this big feast. And Anasuya said, you must be very hungry. And so I'm very surprised why you're not eating. And they said, well, because of the famine that's taking place in the area, we've taken a vow that we won't eat until a certain condition is met. So Anasuya was unhappy. Well, is there any way that I can be of assistance to help you with fulfilling that condition? And they looked at each other. And then they said to Anasuya, we will only eat prasadam if you come and serve it to us in a similar feature as you would have been when you were just born. Now, how does a woman appear when she's just born? No clothes. They didn't say it that way, but that's what they said. So Anasuya was in anxiety. I'm a chaste woman. I can't appear naked in front of men. But on the other hand, it's my duty to serve these elderly, saintly personalities. I don't exactly understand why they took the vow that they took, but somehow, how can I do this? So her anxiety didn't last long. She remembered her dear husband. And she went to the pot of water that had been the water that washed his feet. And she sprinkled the water on the three elderly saintly persons and they turned into little babies. Goo goo gaga. And Anasuya took it. This is the plan of providence. Now I have three children to take care of. So she made little cradles for them. And she rocked the little cradles. And she sang nice songs. And she fed these little babies. She just took care of them like a mother, Mother Anasuya. Meanwhile, back in the spiritual world, or the abode of Lord Goddess of Fortune and Uma and Savitri, there was a big concern. Where's our husbands? They've been gone a long time. So Narada, having seen, he visited Anasuya's ashram, having seen what he saw, these three gods became little babies, he went to go visit Atri Muni in the Himalayas. And Atri Muni in the Himalayas was very surprised to hear. He said, well, when I did my yajna, as was recommended, and everybody came, all the devas came, except Indra didn't come. And these three lords didn't come. So maybe I didn't do the yajna right. And he said, well, not only that, but back in your ashram, Suya has three babies. And I don't know how that happened, but I think you better go back and check it out. So Atri hurried back to his hermitage here in Suchindram. And there he saw his faithful wife, Anasuya, rocking three cradles and singing lullabies. He didn't doubt the fidelity of his wife. He just asked his wife, what happened? And his wife told him what happened. So he was pretty amazed. Well, this is somehow the providential arrangement for you to take care of. Now, meanwhile, Lakshmi and Uma and Saraswati, they're anxiety is growing and growing, so Narada paid them a visit. And they asked, what are we to do to relieve ourselves of this anxiety? Where are our husbands? And Narada said, well, you wanted the chastity of Anasuya tested by your husbands. So they went there, and they tested Anasuya's chastity. But they're now the father-in-law, and at your father-in-law and mother-in-law's place. And they said, oh, wait a minute, we don't have a mother-in-law and father-in-law. What are you talking about? Said, you go to Anasuya's ashram personally and you'll find out. Very complicated, yeah? So Narada accompanied them to Anasuya's ashram. And there he pointed from a distance. See those three cradles? That's your husband's. They became little babies because when this stipulation that they would only eat the meal that Anasuya had cooked if she appeared in that form like she was just born, she sprinkled water on them and they became babies. And the goddesses became really perplexed. We need our husbands. We need babies. What should we do? And Narada said, well, Anasuya is so powerful. She turned them into babies. Maybe she can turn them back. So if you just go in a very humble mood, no, you know, I'm big and you're Anasuya small, just go in a humble mood and just offer to serve her. She's very kind. She'll assist you in relieving you of this anxiety that you have that you don't have your husbands anymore. So they followed Narada's advice. And they went as simple, humble ladies, three of very, very beautiful. And they came before Anasuya. And she smiled very happily. Oh, how nice to see you in this forest, but it's so dangerous. How did you get here, and what is your purpose of coming? And they didn't say the whole story. They just said, those babies in the cradle over there, that's our husbands. And Anasuya said, oh, now I get it. Because she knew that it was sages that had become transformed into little babies. So you can just go and take your husbands home. So they ran over to the cradles and each picked up one of the children, and by Anasuya's power, they for just a moment assumed their actual form. And the chaste Lakuma and Saraswati had touched the wrong person. Wasn't their husband. So, you know, this one touched that one and that one touched the other one, and then they became babies again. And they held their heads and said, oh no, now we've become unchaste. We've touched another man. We were trying to test your chastity and you've shown us you're the epitome of chastity. Now, help! We'd like our husbands back. Narada Muni made a suggestion that they could free themselves from touching another by a purificatory ceremony. They went to Prayag Tirtha, and Narada performed a purificatory ceremony so they were free from the sin. And then Atri Muni made it help you get your husband's back. He's the intermediary here. So we went to Atri, and he disclosed these three goddesses, they're without their husbands and they're being anxiety. So is there something you can do? You're a very powerful sage. Went to his wife, Anusuya, and said, now I understand all this complexity, but somehow as you sprinkled water and these three deities became little children, can you change them back again? Atri asked Anusuya. So Anusuya, under the instruction of her husband to do so, she immediately meditated on her husband's lotus feet, and voila, the three children became the three deities again. And they then stood before Atri and and said, basically, wow, your power, your purity, your fidelity is just amazing. We would like to reciprocate with you. In fact, we would like to become children. So our partial manifestation shall become your children. And they made that commitment to Atri and Anusuya, who had that desire to have the Supreme Lord of the universe as their son. Only now it's all three. But it's not over yet, because Indra hasn't gotten Suchid yet. So, how it happened that Ahalya was violated by Indra is narrated as follows. Just as Lord Brahma created from his own body these 10 sages and other personalities, he also created Anusuya, his own direct daughter. And Anusuya was fabulously qualified and extremely beautiful, and Lord Brahma desired that she should marry the most qualified person. You know how fathers are. Most qualified person. So he decided one way to do this was to make a competition, a contest. Whoever could travel the circumference of the earth first, he could marry Anusuya. So the various personalities got their kitty and on your mark, get set, go. But one of the persons who was also an eligible candidate was Gotama. And Gotama, knowing the scripture, understood that a cow is equal to the whole world. And so he just circumambulated the cow and he won. Devanasuya. Lord Brahma was really impressed. So now a little description of the strength and the merit of intelligence properly applied. Wisdom. Wisdom is something that's really hard to find. Wisdom doesn't just mean you have a big IQ and you can take things and abstract things and then, you know, you get a good score on your IQ test. But wisdom is a very practical application in reference to scripture. Prabhupada told a story once. I'm going to tell two Prabhupada stories. Prabhupada told the story once of one king who regularly gave so much honor to his minister, his chief minister, that the others in the kingdom, the other generals and lesser ministers, they were envious. You're giving so much honor and credence to this one minister. I think it's too much. They were envious. So the king said, let me demonstrate to you why. I challenge any one of you or all of you together to weigh the largest of the royal elephants. Please go ahead and do that. None of them knew how to weigh this huge royal elephant. And days passed, come up with a solution. So then he said, I'm going to approach my chief minister. And the chief minister solved it in half a day. He had the elephant get on a boat and mark the point where the water line went up to. Then he had the elephant get off the boat. Then he put known weights on the boat until the water line went up to that same line when the elephant was in the boat. Then he knew what the weight of the boat, what the weight of the elephant was. He said, that's why I rely so much on my minister. He's not only intelligent, he's very practical. He's very wise. And all of you, you're very strong, and you can understand analytically this and that, but you don't have the wisdom of this minister of mine. So I always consult with him. I value his wisdom very much. Confirmed. So Prabhupada told another story also. Well, actually, one time when I was visiting in Bhubaneswar, this is like, 25 years ago. And, now there's some 25 years ago, it was literally just fields. Fields and a little straw hut. And that straw hut was on the ISKCON land, and there was a boundary fence and fields in any direction you looked in. So we were visiting a devotee who was assisting Gaur Govinda Maharaj at that location, and he took us to the Bhubaneswar Zoo. And I didn't really care to go to the Bhubaneswar Zoo, but he said, Prabhupada had taken the devotees to Bhubaneswar Zoo, let's go to Bhubaneswar Zoo. So we went to Bhubaneswar Zoo. The end of seeing the zoo, this devotee said, at the end of taking all the devotees through the zoo, Prabhupada asked the following question. What lesson did we just learn? And of course, the devotees that went with Prabhupada didn't know, and none of us knew either. But Prabhupada's reply, the lesson that we've learned is, intelligence is stronger than physical strength, physical brute strength. Because the first cage was a big lion. And he was in a cage. Powerful lion. King of the jungle. But he was captured by a man, or some men, because they had superior intelligence. However they did it, intelligence is stronger than brute strength. So Gotama similarly had such wisdom, and he earned hand of Ahalya in marriage, and they made their residence in Gotama's ashram. But one of the persons who really had wanted to marry Ahalya was Indra. And it was just one of those things, like they sing in pop songs. I can't get her off of my mind. And things like that. So he couldn't stop meditating on Ahalya. So he made a plan. Indra has different powers, so one of his powers was, early in the morning, before the sunrise rose, he made a rooster sound, because sages, that's when, that was their alarm clock. Wasn't, you know, trucks passing and the other things that we use for alarm clocks. It was a rooster. And when the rooster crowed, Gotama rose and went to take his bath. Indra then came in his, like, regular Indra attire. And Indra, king of heaven, very opulent, extremely handsome, very charming with his words. But he came in disguised like Gotama shortly after Gotama had left. Now, Ahalya, three strikes and she's out. She knew that her husband would never approach her in a lusty manner at an improper hour. And she knew from his mannerisms, these are not the mannerisms of my husband. And third, the charms of Indra, although she knew it wasn't her husband, but she had this inclination because she knew that Indra had a crush on her, that it was Indra. And she yielded to his advances. Although she didn't, the greater part of her was the higher nature, her fidelity and faithfulness and chastity to Gotama, the lower nature overcame her. And she yielded to Indra. And he polluted her. Right there in Gotama's ashram. And so a little commentary is, you know, anishtita bhakti, unsteady devotion. When we know better, but we still do the wrong thing. There's this thing called rationalizing or justifying. Somehow the mind starts making some noise. And the mind says, yeah, but it's not okay, but it's okay. And then you go to, it's okay, da 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 da. She yielded to that voice. And when one yields to justifications of things that we know that aren't right and yet we do them anyway, one can make some big mistakes and sometimes irreversible mistakes. Some mistake you can't take back and say, gee, I'm sorry. So, shortly after the act of lust was consummated, both Anasuya, well, first it was Anasuya, a little light went on. I've done a terrible sin. So she was feeling great regret and great repentance because that justification covering was now moved because she did the act after justifying the act. But her higher nature started to rise. And she reeled down a very, very big mistake. So her next reaction was cover up. Don't tell anybody. And you should leave this place at once, because if Gotama comes back and sees you here. So when she spoke like that, Indra realized, uh-oh. And he tried to make a getaway. Just at that moment, Gotama came back. The rishi, the seer. So Indra tried to make himself like small, like a cat. He could just like scoot out the door. But he was frozen. He couldn't move at all. And Gotama became angry, like in a rage. And he cursed them both. He cursed Anasuya, that you become a stone. You're a stone-hearted person. Become a stone. And Indra, you can't control yourself. You become a eunuch. May your manhood fall from you. And when a powerful sage like Gotama speaks something like that, it's not like a guy in the street that says something like that. He was very powerful. Ahalya, now her higher nature prevailing, expressed very sincerely and genuinely her wrecking mistake, the great offense that she had made, the sin that she had committed, and she begged Gotama for forgiveness. And he was actually softened by her demeanor and said, well, a curse is a curse, it can't be taken away. But after a long period of time of your existing as a rock, the personality of Godhead Lord Ramachandra will come and he will touch you with his lotus feet. And when you're touched by the lotus feet of Ramachandra, all purification will take place and you can resume your Ahalya form. So Vishvamitra Muni, knowing that, when he brought Ram on the way to break Sita's bow and become the husband of Sita, just by the touch of his feet on that rock, Ahalya came. This beautiful Ahalya, bowing before Ram, Ram Lakshman and Vishvamitra Muni standing there, appreciating her softness of heart. Now, acharyas make us with Ram's touching with his feet the stone that had that Ahalya had become, and Tataka, who similarly had been cursed. We'll go back. Tataka was the mother of Marichi and Subahu. Remember during our discussions about Ravana that he had this relation with Maricha and Subahu? Remember that? It's from his mother's side. Because Vishrava was the son of Palashya, but Vishrava had married Kaikeshi, and Kaikeshi was the daughter of Sumali, and Sumali was like a hardcore kid, and Sumali had a brother and his name was Sunda. Sunda was the father and Tataka was the mother, and Maricha and Subahu were their sons, and you know they were that in that way related to Ravana. But when he married Tataka, Sunda was a hardcore demon, and his program, his life mission, was harassing people, and his special favorite of harassment was sages. He was like into it. You know, a specialized terrorist, a sage harasser terrorist. So one time he came to the ashram of Agastya and started running after Agastya to kill Agastya. Agastya just looked up and understood where Sanda, his mood and his intent. And he just, by looking at him, immediately Sunda burst into flames and his body became a pile of ashes. Like what Muchukunda did when, what's his name? Came into the cave. Kaliyavana. So, Sandha just became a pile of ashes. Ataka, not accepting that Sandha had been killed in self-defense. He was just going to rip Agastya to pieces and eat him. So Tataka wanted to take revenge. Rather than feeling repentant for a mistake that her husband had made, or she's now going to make the same mistake, together with her two sons, Marichi and Subahu, they went charging at Agastya. And Agastya didn't hinder them this time. He just said, "You three, this is disgusting. You should become demons, rakshasis, and Tataka, your beautiful form should become ugly and disheveled and strange looking." So as Agastya cursed Tataka, big difference that both Tataka and Ahalya had made a big mistake in relation to a great personality. But the big difference was Ahalya was very repentant, instantly repentant. And Tataka was not at all repentant. She kept the same program as a Rakshasi. She made this vow. She was going to destroy all hermitages of all sages on the planet. She went like on a terrorist rampage. And it was Tataka who was the first demon that Ram killed. And Subahu and Richa went flying some 300 miles in the air or whatever Ram's arrows. But they had taken that position because of an offense to a great sage. So, practical application. We all make mistakes. Sometimes big ones, mediums, small ones. Whatever the size of them is, we all make mistakes. We're conditioned souls and prone to make mistakes. Now, how do we address ourselves to our mistakes? There's wonderful lessons in the scripture. This is one of them. Immediately, the lesson is be repentant and be willing, just as Lord Brahma speaks in this wonderful verse in 10th canto, chapter 14, after he knows he's going to get a big reaction for having taken the calves and the cowherd boys and put them in caves, the Mohan Leela. He offers this nice prayer that he says, "I know there's a reaction coming, and what am I going to do about it? I'm just going to accept the reaction that's coming." But what, besides accepting the reaction that's coming, let my mind not deviate one inch, one fraction of an inch from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord while I'm undergoing this reaction. For by so doing, I recognize I will inherit the spiritual world. I'll become a resident of the spiritual world. Specifically, he says, I will inherit the property of my father. But who is Brahma's father? Who is Brahma's father? Krishna Chaitanya. Who is Brahma's father? Lord Vishnu, right? Lord Vishnu? Yes? And where does Lord Vishnu reside? In the spiritual world. So to inherit the kingdom of his father means he'll go back to Godhead. Would you like to go back to Godhead? So you have to keep your mind fixed on the personality of Godhead. So getting a nice name like Krishna Chaitanya, that's a good beginning. So every time you hear your name, you can think of Krishna Chaitanya. But not you, but Krishna Chaitanya. Right? Krishna Chaitanya. Krishna Chaitanya. Krishna Chaitanya. Krishna Chaitanya. There was a devotee, Krishna Chaitanya, who was a great devotee, and he wanted to go visit Nimai Pandit when he was still Nimai Pandit. But he was a great devotee of Krishna. So he went on a little pilgrimage to go to visit him in Navadvip. But on the way he stopped in Katwa. Krishna Chaitanya, you got to listen to this. This is in relation to your name. He went to Katwa, and much to his surprise, Nimai Pandit was taking sannyas. And he was shocked. He's the personality of Godhead. What's he doing taking sannyas? The austerities of sannyas. He's going to sleep on the floor and carry a danda and shave his head and be renounced. He's the personality of Godhead. He doesn't need to renounce anything. And when he saw the hair of Nimai Pandit being cut by Madhu the barber and heard the pronouncement by Keshava Bharati of his sannyas name, which was Krishna Chaitanya. That was Pandit's sannyas name. He never went to Navadvip. He just went back to his home. And he can only utter two words. For the next couple of months, he just was walking around the streets of his town saying, Krishna Chaitanya. Krishna Chaitanya. Krishna Chaitanya. Everyone thought he had gone mad. And they even changed his name. They called him Chaitanya Das. Krishna Chaitanya. So Ahalya was repentant for her wrongdoing, and Tathaka was not. So Tathaka, her situation became worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And Ahalya simply had to endure the indication of her husband to become a stone. That's like not so nice, but what she had done was very stone-hearted. Again, our Acharya's comment. To act in a way that's just self-indulgent, not considering social convention or what is proper or how other people will be affected. Just, she was charmed by the fact that Indra liked her. Woo woo, Ahalya, woo woo. And she was wooed. That was a weakness. She wanted that attention, that male attention for her good looks and charming features and so forth. That was a weakness. And that made her stone-hearted. So that she could just completely forget what her higher nature is and act according to this lower nature. And she regretted it, but she had submitted to lust and, you know, the favor of another bringing attention to her as elevated as she was. So, but repentant at the same time, and that was her redeeming quality. Gotama considered, on the one hand, but on the other hand, on the one hand, it's not her nature to be like that. It was in a particular circumstance. She was overwhelmed by the circumstance. It wasn't a calculated, cut over a period of time, let me go do this bad thing. It was a circumstantial thing. Indra coming to seduce her in a very clever way. So that part he could overlook, but the act he couldn't overlook, and so he did what he did. So Indra similarly pleaded to Gautama, what can I do to overcome the reaction of the sin for what I have done? Gautama pronounced that when you find all three, Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva together, you worship all three of them together, and then you can become the reaction of this sin of violating Ahalya. And Gautama just left his ashram. Now Indra was deeply ashamed, and as it turned out, it was during this time that Indra was, he didn't go back to his Indraloka, to his heavenly planet. He was too much ashamed at his condition and at his sin, and it was during that period of time there was no sufficient rain here in Suchindram. That's why Atri had to go to the Himalayas to do the yajna, to try to get Indra to come and then explain to him, he has to supply some rain, please. So Indra was undergoing penance for some time, and Narada found him, and Narada asked him, you know, what is your plan, Indra? You have service to do, and you have this shame hanging on your head. He said, well, I don't know how I can make an arrangement where Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are at the same place at the same time. Well, Narada said, I know how you can do that, but you have to hurry. There is Suchindram, and very soon they're going to be going back with their wives. So as the intercessor or the intermediary, Narada came to Atri and said, Atri, poor Indra, he's made this sinful activity and he's suffering the reaction of that sinful activity. Is there something that you can do? And he said, yes, I feel very sorry for Indra also. When he didn't come for the yajna, I understood there was some difficulty, and now that explains why there was no rain. So surely these three lords, I will approach them, Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, and request them to please relieve Indra of this reaction. So Indra came here to Suchindram, and he worshipped those three lords, and they in turn then made the arrangement that bountiful rain would come to this area, as need was met, and Indra was relieved of his sinful reaction, so Indra could then return back to his post in Indraloka. And these three deities Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva in one deity form remained here for us to come and pay our respects and hear this amazing pastime, glorifying specifically the power of Atri and Anasuya. Now, for the third time, the personality of Godhead is not dependent on anybody. Another nice example of this that comes to mind right now is Krishna wanted Bhishma Dev to be properly glorified, although Bhishma Dev made a mistake. The mistake was in the Royal Assembly, he didn't stand and defend Draupadi. Prabhupada writes right in the purport of that section that anyone, whoever you are, even your grandfather Bhishma, if you don't protect women, you'll be destroyed. Protection is an important religious principle. Krishna wanted to teach that. So Krishna taught it through Bhishma. But at the same time, and Bhishma fought on the side of the Kauravas. That's another thing. But that was for another reason, so he could be in this chivalrous rasa with Krishna. But Krishna wanted to clear any doubt or uncertainty about Bhishma, so he created a pastime where Yudhisthira was lamenting very, very, very uncontrollably after the Kurukshetra battle, and no one could pacify him. Even Krishna could not pacify Grandfather Bhishma, could not pacify Yudhisthira, but Bhishma pacified Yudhisthira. Krishna likes to place his devotee above himself. There are many examples. So this is one of those examples. Atri and Anasuya, great personalities, and their qualities and characteristics are to this day because of this pastime of the Supreme Lord placing him and Anasuya in such a high position. So that's Suchindram.